Hello and welcome to the Tao of June, Living an Inspired Life. I wanted to try something a little new and different, something I haven't done before. There's a story that I have in my mind that I've been actually kind of tossing around my head for the past, I don't know, 3, 4 years. I just haven't had time to sit down and actually flesh it out yet. And I may never. So I wanted to just kind of do like a rough draft, I guess, rough audio draft of the story that's in my head. It's a fiction that I wanted to write, the short story. Well, I'll try to keep it short anyway. The story is going to be about me in the future, kind of, well, a character roughly based on me, on my life. But fast forward to when I'm 60, or maybe even 65, you know, but around retirement age. And I'm in the twilight of my life. And I wanted to pick up the story there where, you know, I've just been this ambitious, young, awkward boy and that grew up into a socially awkward young man that was extremely driven and ambitious and hardworking. But because of that, you know, because of that combination, not really being great with social etiquette, not really knowing how to behave exactly and how to reciprocate properly in social situations, mix that with a deep desire, this you know, burning desire inside to, you know, become successful, become someone of, you know, of merit, right? Someone of, what do you call that? Remarkable person, you know, someone worth mentioning in history, right? I had this big goal. I didn't know how I was going to do it, and I didn't know what I was going to do, but I knew that I was going to try to help people somehow. And that's what I did. First, I once started going witnessing. I thought I was going to do it as being a pastor because when I was younger, my mom's pastor used to come when things got really rough. And when after he prayed with my parents and listened to them and talked to them and, you know, encouraged them, things would be a little better when he left, you know, and I wouldn't have to feel so scared. And I wanted to be that guy growing up. And that's why I took it so seriously. I would go door to door witnessing, you know, doing the evangelism, literature evangelism, spreading the, you know, like different Bible, based on the Bible and encouraging, you know, books and things like that, children's books, healthy cookbooks and things like that. I went door to door and quote unquote sold them, but it really was like a more like a love donation. And it was a way that I helped, you know, fund my way through school because it was a Christian school, a private school. My parents did pay, but I really helped them out, you know. I did, you know, because I work hard and I wanted to do well. And I still remember the script. It was a long script we had to memorize. Anyways, but yeah, so take that character, right? Just and I took that into dog grooming. Even when I was selling cars, I was like running around trying to do my very best. And I remember one time my sales manager at Honda, when I was at Honda, and the last place I worked was at Nissan, and that's where I met the dog groomers, and I found out that dog grooming was a thing that you could actually do for a job and make money. And I was like, forget this. What am I doing with my life? You know, you could do that. but so at Honda, my manager, who was also my sales manager at Chevy, and I followed him to Honda, and that goes on a lot in the car industry. My managers just bounce around from dealership to dealership. But I followed him to Honda, and he calls me one night, and he's in the hospital. He says, June, and I'm at work. But I didn't have a client, you know, customer. I wasn't working a sale or anything. And I was actually out having a cigarette break because I smoked a lot of cigarettes back then. And he calls me. He goes, June, you're just too good of a guy, man. He's like, you really need to get out of this business. And I was like, what? I thought I was doing a good job, you know. I love helping people because I never did it because I like the cars, you know, and that's why it was so easy for me to just move from Chevy to Honda to Nissan because I really didn't care about cars. Well, until I went to Nissan, I really did like the Nissan cars, and I like having a Maxima is probably my big goal in life is to get a Maxima, a stick shift. But anyways, that's not even the point. But yeah, I was like, you know, I love helping people and stuff. He was like, I know. He was like, that's why you need to get out of this business. He was like, look at me. I'm in the hospital from stress. He was like, I pretty much had like a stroke, a mini stroke from all the stress. He was like, yeah, you know, do you think my wife and my two sons have come to visit me? He had two little boys at the time. He was like, no, they hate me. They're not even talking to me because, you know, because all the, I'm working so many hours, and he was like, it's not even worth it. And he was like, look at all the other managers in the sales tower. He was like, the GSM and all that stuff, you know, like, you know, he was like, do you think they look happy? Do they ever look happy? He's like, look how angry they are all the time. Look how stressed they are. You know, he was like, and most of them are divorced. If they're not divorced, their wives hate them. It's just like mine, you know? He was like, is that what you want? He was like, that's what success looks like in this business. He was like, you keep working on your way up and you keep getting, you know, better and better, and that's where you're gonna end up. And is that really what you want? And I was like, oh my God, I never even thought of it, you know? And Stephen Covey said it best. He says, before scrambling up the ladder of success, make sure it's leaning against the right wall. Because I was about to scramble up that ladder of success because I don't know. I mean, I'm just a hard worker and I mean, it's my job and I was pretty good at it because I like people. And so but I never thought about it. It's like, yeah, the more and more, the higher and higher I get in this business, the more and more stressed and unhappy I'm going to be. Huh. You know? And then I was like, ah, okay, he's right. But I think I went to I worked at a used car business. I forget, it's all jumbled up now. Man, that was a long time ago. But anyways, I ended up at Nissan, and then once I realized you could do dog grooming, boom. And then I took my that same work ethic into dog grooming, and now I'm known as one of the best dog groomers here in Atlanta. I mean, I'm not trying to say that I am. I know a lot of groomers who I would consider are better than me, you know, and they can do much better haircuts. They do coloring and dyeing the hair and all that, you know. I just do really well scissored, fluffy, teddy bear looking haircuts, you know, and I'm good at it. But I also do hand stripping, and I also do retrievers, and I do everything, you know. But I'm just a really hard worker, I guess, and I'm willing to go through the shit. I'm willing to go through the muck to get that reward at the end, you know, because it's so rewarding when the dog is so happy and beautiful, and your hand just slides through the coat, and it feels so incredibly soft and smooth and silky, like it's like a cloud or something, you know, like you're holding a soft cloud. Anyways, that's just loving you and wiggling around and licking your face, you know. But let's just say that, and I have become pretty successful, I guess, if you think about it. I mean, I've gotten paid $1,000 to groom a dog, and I go there regularly, you know, every month now. And one of my clients pays me anywhere between 400 and 500 for her two dogs. One time she canceled on me because she had to, you know, something came up, and she still Venmoed me $400. She was like, here, take the day off. I was like, what? I didn't even do anything. You know, I was like, I'll just apply this to the next time. She was like, no, you know, I took up that day on your schedule. Your time is valuable, and I want you to enjoy your day off. Here you go. And I was like, oh my God. You know, like, oh wow. I finally reached a level in this industry, you know, in my career where I'm a dog groomer, where now I feel so valued and so appreciated, and I feel so happy and fulfilled. You know, it's like, so I chose a better industry, I guess, because in car sales, you know, the higher I got, the more stressed and unhappy I would get. Here in the dog grooming business, the higher I'm, you know, the higher I get, you know, the higher level of experience, I guess, reputation, right? Brand recognition here in Atlanta, I guess. You know, the higher I get with that, the more fulfilled I am and the happier I am, you know? So I guess the reason why I'm even saying that is not to impress anyone, not to impress you, but to impress upon you, just give me the idea that what are you doing right now? What is the career path that you're on? And just kind of project into the future, 5, 10 years from now, as you level up, how does your life look? And are you happy? You know, when you're up there, up that ladder, you know, when you're almost at the top, and let's say you even get there, will you be happy once you get there? Or will you be among the wrong crowd? You know, people who make you feel anxious and uncomfortable and nervous, right? So just think about that. But because I found something I care about and love so much, which are dogs, and taking care of them and helping them feel happy and comfortable and beautiful, I now have, you know, I found the inspiration to write about my philosophy and my approach to dog grooming, which is the art of grooming. I wrote another book about my process because so many people have asked me to, you know, outline the steps that my 4 steps that I follow in when I groom a dog. So I wrote another book called The 4 Steps to a Beautiful Groom. And I'm sorry, my nose is getting stuffy. And I don't know how to cut and edit and everything, so you may want to mute this. I'm giving you plenty of a warning. I'm about to blow my nose. Sorry about that, guys. I've always had this issue. If you watch my YouTube videos, June the Groomer on YouTube. Anyways, a little plug there. A shameless plug. I don't care. You'll see, back since 2012, always had this, like, you know, nose issues. I've even had a surgery on my nose, inside my nose, not the way it looks, because it's always perfect. It's always been perfect. I was just born with a perfect nose. So I never had any need for any plastic surgery on my nose. I just got a laser surgery done inside my nose because it helps me breathe a little bit better instead of feeling like I'm suffocating and dying. That's not the point. Anyways. But again, like the YouTube channel, my you know, website turned into a blog. So all of these things happen because I found something that I actually love and care about and I actually want to be good at. And it's difficult and it's hard, but I love it because I love feeling like I'm good at it, right? And getting better. Same thing with hunting. Now that I'm going out and learning how to hunt and learning how to move through the forest and the woods. And anyways, let's just say that by the time I'm 60, by the time I'm 60 or 65, give it 5 more years, I am a self-made millionaire. I'm living not just comfortably, but I'm living in luxury, you know, sophistication at its best, right? And let's just say, because that was the stuff that I thought I wanted when I wrote stuff in my journal back, like, you know, 10, 15 years ago. I thought I wanted to be rich and famous and everything like that. So let's just say I got it, because now I'm not even pursuing that anymore. I don't want that. I want a quiet life. I want a private life. I want to go out and hunt. I want to be, you know, one of my big quests, my new quest right now in life, is to take down a wild boar with my bow. And to do that, I have to become a skilled woodsman. I have to become a skilled tracker. And I have to become so good at so many things. I have to, you know, become a skilled archer, right? And that means I have to practice shooting my bow every day, which I do. I even shoot my room when it's raining. So that's my new quest, is become, to take down a wild boar with my bow on public hunting land. Now, but let's just say that I never had that epiphany that, oh, what I really want is just to be fulfilled and happy. And I'm an introvert and I do love people, but I'm not extroverted by nature. And it just drains me and wears on me. And it overwhelms me sometimes when I'm around too many people and things like that, and too much is going on. And I handle it well. I've learned to handle it better, but then I go home and I'm drained and I need to just be by myself. And I don't like to talk to anyone for a few days after that. You know, that's just me. So I realized that's not what I want. I don't want to be rich or famous. Well, I'm rich already, you know, because I have enough. And as long as you have enough, you're always rich. You're living in abundance, you know, because you're operating from that mindset of I always have enough. People who never have enough and they always need more, they will always be poor, no matter how much you have in the bank. Because sophistication is not an amount in the bank. You know, sophistication has nothing to do with how much money you have in your bank account. Sophistication is knowing how to enjoy the finer things in life. When you go to an art museum, you don't just breeze by the whole, you know, just walk by or whatever. You really look at it, you really study it, and you really appreciate the time it took that artist to create this painting that didn't exist before they put in the time and effort. And you start to learn more about each painting style, you know, and about the painter, about the artist. This is sophistication. When I go to the Shakespeare Tavern by myself, because I don't like to go with other people anymore, because when I take somebody, it always turns into conversations and I always have to worry about whether or not they're actually enjoying it. You know, when I go by myself, I'm just zoned in. I'm taking it all in. I love it. And I'm really listening and I'm watching and I'm really like, I kind of pretend that I'm back at the real Globe Theater where the Shakespearean plays were originally performed. You know, because the Shakespeare Tavern here in Atlanta, they made it kind of like that, a nice, small, intimate space where you order food and drinks and you're just seeing the live play. And sometimes they come out to the audience and, oh my goodness. But knowing how to appreciate that, knowing how to enjoy that, not just going just for the gram, hashtag, you know, Shakespeare Tavern, hashtag look at me, you know. But going there because I actually enjoy it and I really do want to understand more and more like deeper levels, because those stories are complex, and a lot of the human drama, the conflict and the love triangle and everything, the anger, the war, the fighting, everything. It's like, wow, we're still playing it out today. You know, human beings have not changed very much in the past 500-600 years, you know, since Shakespeare wrote those plays. We're pretty much the same emotional beings, irrational, illogical, emotional creatures that human beings are. 1 second. Oh, man. That dark roast. Now I'm talking about that dark roast, baby. So where was it going with this? What was I even talking about? Oh yeah. Okay. So talking about sophistication and all that stuff, which has nothing to do with the story that I wanted to tell. Holy cow. This is like way too much setup, but you know what? This is my podcast. Who cares? People who listen to my podcast, you guys pretty much know. All right. We're at 19 minutes. You know what I'm saying? We're at 19 minutes and we're still setting up this freaking fiction. This short story that I want to tell. Okay, here we go, guys. So that's the backstory. It's based, the character is going to be loosely based on myself. And we're just going to project 5-10 years from now, had I never had a change of heart, and I'm still pursuing riches and fame and a life of luxury, right? Which I thought I wanted. Now, here we go. Here's a story. A cut scene, right? We zoom in. And there I am, an old man. 65 years old, and I'm enjoying a nice cup espresso. You know what I'm saying? A nice latte, right? Just a incredible ceramic cup, you know, of just the best latte money can buy. Made from the best espresso beans, right? Ground fresh, hand pressed. Now I'm talking about sun. And there I am looking out of my mansion. So the kind of mansion that I'm thinking about is like one of those modern styles, you know, so those rectangles, but they're all like glass, and it's overlooking like it's overlooking the forest, you know, mountains and like a creek, you know. It's like maybe somewhere in Utah or Colorado, that kind of area, right? So my house is on the side of a mountain top, and it's like built so that I'm at the window where I'm in this big, you know, big room made of glass, and it's rectangle in shape, and I'm standing overlooking the mountainside, you know, the beautiful scenery, enjoying a nice latte in the morning. And I'm taking in the mountain breeze in the morning. And I'm just thinking to myself, wow, isn't this nice? You know, I worked so hard my whole life. You know, all those hours I put in, you know, all the time sacrificed away from my family, you know, all the time that I didn't do things with my daughters and I was working instead to build this future for them and myself. You know, and I'm feeling proud of myself, right? And I'm sipping my coffee, and I'm thinking, man, now that I have all this money, though, it really would be nice to, like, try hunting. I really want to try, you know, buying a bow and arrow and everything, and all the stuff that I wanted to do, but I just didn't have time because I was working, you know? Man, but I don't even have the strength anymore, and I'm 65. Like, man, I guess, like, I don't know, like, If only I could like buy a younger body, you know, and then that's what I'm thinking when I'm 65. Like, now that I have all this money, I could buy whatever I want. It would be nice if I could buy a new body to do and travel around and do all the things that I wanted to do when I was younger, but I just couldn't because I was working all the time. Man, you know, and then I decide, you know what, I'm just going to start looking into it. Maybe there is a way that I can like somehow, you know, regenerate cells or stem cells. And because keep in mind, if I'm 65, I'm 40. Now, there's 25 years into the future. So by then, you know, artificial intelligence, you know, AI, nanotechnology, all of these things. So I might start thinking, like, maybe I can even, like, replace my limbs, you know, like, just get robotic arms and legs, you know. And so I'm thinking about this. I start researching. And let's see, I go down this rabbit hole and I find this doctor who is working on downloading the human consciousness, the brain, you know, and he's mapped out all the synapses and neurons and all of that stuff in our brain. And he knows how to basically download it into a computer chip. And this is a book that I actually listened to called The Future of the Mind by Michio Kaku. I think I pronounced that right. But anyways, they were in that book, he discussed how they're working on that now. This was years ago when I listened to that book, so they're probably much more advanced into it now, because he was saying that the stage that they were at when I listened to the book is when they first made the first computers back in like the what 60s or 70s, and they took up an entire floor, and there was actual tubes, you know, and that's where they got the word term like getting bugs. You know, because literally bugs would get stuck in the tubes. And, you know, they're saying that that's where they were when they first developed the first computers. And they were very simple. They were performing very simple tasks. Now we have the computer basically in our hands, you know, these smartphones, and they perform so many complicated tasks, right? He's saying that, but the time that it took for us to get the computer from taking up an entire floor of a building to now it fits in the palm of our hand. He was saying that the time it's going to take for them to develop the technology to download our brain, map out the human brain, and get it down to a small computer chip, he's saying it's the time is going to be cut down exponentially because we already have this, we already have all this technology already that we didn't have before to help us. And once we develop artificial intelligence, AI, you know, computers that teach it to learn on its own, and they can learn much faster than us, you know, with the help of AI, you know, we're going to be able to map out the human brain and download our consciousness, our memories, our personality, everything into a computer chip. So let's just say that 25 years from now, this is cutting edge technology. It's trial and error. It's, sometimes it doesn't work. It's very risky. And it's very, very expensive, right? Right down my lane. So let's say at 65 years old, I contact this guy and I tell him, hey, listen, money's not an issue anymore with me, but I want more time and I want my youth back. I want my energy back so I can do things with my money, you know, so I can actually, you know, have adventures and do things that I wanted to do. Go out into the woods and camp, you know, and backpack and, you know, maybe even do the Appalachian Trail. You know, like backpack that. I don't know, but I want to do things, but I have the money now. I just don't have the energy. And I heard that you're able to download my consciousness into a computer chip. And then what? And, you know, the scientist says, oh, that's the beautiful part. Once we have your consciousness downloaded onto this computer chip, you can basically just put that computer chip into anything you want, into any body you want, into any, you know, machine you want, anything, any computer you want, you know, you can pretty much take over. And, you know, and you can also, like this was in that book, you can also shoot that information in the form of a laser beam out into space. And so you would be traveling space at the speed of light, a laser beam, and it would be your consciousness. And he's saying that as long as there was something on the other side that you're pointing at to receive that information, that beam of light, and download that information, then basically we could travel the universe at the speed of light, you know, just from one receptor to the other, just shoot the laser beam at it. And then, boom, you would instantly be on another planet or whatever. Isn't that crazy? In a robot body. And once you're there, you know, they could put your computer chip into another robot body. So this is crazy, right? But let's just say that at 65 years old, now that I'm a billionaire, you know, I'm just like, all right, let's do it. Let's do it, you know? And he's like, well, take some time to think about it, because once we go through with this, it's irreversible. You can't go back into your body. Your body's going to be pretty much lifeless shell. You're going to be dead. Your physical body's going to be dead. And you, your consciousness, will be in a computer chip. And, you know, there's a lot of risks there. There's a lot of stuff that could go wrong. And there's no guarantee. So talk it over with your family. So I say, you're right. You're right. And so I go and talk it over with my daughters, you know, and maybe probably my third wife, fourth wife, right? No, I'm just kidding. I'm not that dumb. Or maybe I am, right? Because obviously I still chased after fame and wealth. So thought that was going to make me happy. And obviously there's no way to happiness. You know, happiness is the way. There's no destination. Oh, I'll be happy when? No, you won't. You'll still be the same person you are now. So just choose to be happy now, and then you'll take that happy person there. Anyways, so let's just say that I go home and talk it over with my family, especially my two daughters, you know, my older daughter, Ava, my younger daughter, Annabelle. And let's just say that Ava, because I can see Ava with the family. She's always been the caring, nurturing type, and so considerate and so good with babies, and babies just gravitate towards her. And she's only 12 right now. and she holds them and she takes care of them and feeds them, and just she's such a good, like, caring, nurturing, tender hearted person. So I can see her with the family. Annabelle, I can see her as a female mixed martial arts, like a USC fighter. You know what I'm saying? I can see her as a USC fighter when she grows up. She is badass. So let's just say I talk it over with my daughters, you know, and my grandkids, who will be, you know, young at that time. They'll probably be, yeah, because 25 years from now, Ava will be, she's 12 now, so 37. Yeah. So I may have, like, young grandkids, you know, 5, 6, you know. So I'm playing with them and I'm telling them, like, yeah, you know, grandpa, I'm thinking about getting a robot body. So I'll be, you know, young, you know, strong. I can do anything. I can run with you guys, you know. And they're going to be like, oh, that's so cool. You know, wow, no. And then my daughter Ava will be like, I don't know, Dad. Like, I don't know. And I'll be like, but Ava, you know, all those times we could have gone out to the, you know, to go hiking together and walk trails together and enjoy nature and, you know, and do things together. Like, I'm planning on taking them to Andretti Speed Raceway. You know, but like, and, you know, all those things that I do with my daughters, and I take the time because I'd rather take that time and spend it with them than go and make some more money. Money is replaceable. Time with my daughters is not. So let's just say that, you know, my character, you know, was just so driven and so ambitious and just so dead set on the prize and achieving this goal no matter what, you know, sacrificed all that. So he's telling his daughter, you know, Ava, you know, all that time that I, you know, all the things that we wanted to do, you know, go to that wild safari drive through and everything. It's like, now that I'm older, you know, like, I don't know if I have the energy, but what if I have a robot body and I have energy, you know, tons of energy. Energy is not even a problem anymore, you know, and I never get hungry or tired or sleepy or anything, you know, I can just keep going. And it would still be me, same jokes, same everything. And she would just be like, I don't know, but it's just so weird though. You're going to be in a robot body though. I'll be like, yeah, but I mean, they can make it look human, you know, like it'll look like an android body kind of, you know, like, and they're getting really good at it. It's like kind of realistic. And I'm like, oh, I know, but it's still creepy almost. I would rather just it look like a robot just with you knowing that you're inside of it, than for it to look kind of human, you know, that's kind of creepy, right? And so we discuss it back and forth, and I'll tell him, all right, it'll be cheaper anyways, you know, we'll just get it where it just looks like a robot body, you know, and I'll be like metallic, but you'll just know that I'm inside. And they all say, like, you know, we don't want you to do it, you know, but it's better than you getting old and dying, you know, I guess. It is kind of like you getting to live forever. So, okay, you know, I mean, if you're going to do it anyways, you know, because they know me. Once I make a decision, it's very hard to get me to change my decision. You know, like, it has to take somebody that I really trust and care about, like my daughters. But even then, you know, if I have my mind set and I'm explaining to them, you know, that I just don't want to leave yet, you know, and let's just, you know, to make it more realistic, let's just say I'm 72, you know, and I'm considering all this because 70, 65, you're still pretty much, you know, you're still able to move around, you know, pretty well. I know a lot of 65-year-olds that are, you know, doing really well health-wise, So let's just say I'm 72 years old. And I'm just like, you know, I just don't want to leave yet. You know, like, I just got this. I just got all these riches, you know, this nice house and nice cars and all this money. It's like, I finally got it all. And now I'm old and I'm about to die soon. You know, who knows when, but I can feel like I don't have much time left. I feel tired all the time. You know, I'm 72 years old and, I just, I want some of that time back, and I want that youth and energy back. And so I want to be able to enjoy some of this right now. It's like I just got it, and I can't even enjoy it, and I'm gonna die soon. It just doesn't seem fair. And so my daughters will say, oh, all right, Dad, you know, I guess you can try it. And then, yeah, I'll tell them, and I would even reason with them, like, you know, how much longer do you think I have? I'm 72. You know, you think I got 5 more years left? You know, I'll be 77, maybe 10 years left. I'll be 82. You know, like, how many more years do you think I have? And what about the quality of life? Right? Like, I don't know. I just, now that I have all these riches, it's almost like I'd rather not have it if I can't enjoy it. It just seems unfair and cruel, almost like a cruel joke that life plays. And my daughters will say, okay, fine, Dad, go ahead and just try it. You know, and I'll tell them, yeah, because I want to die anyways. You know, let's say the experiment doesn't work and I'm gone. Well, I'm going to be gone soon anyways, you know? And my daughter's like, all right, fine, you know? And then I go to the scientists, I say, let's do it, green light. All systems go, right? Make it so, sir. And so we go through the procedure, and it's a pretty lengthy one. And boom, finally, they got me downloaded into this chip. And at first, they're just communicating with me through computers, and I'm chatting with them through the computers, right? And it's incredible. I'm telling them, like, what? Like, I feel like, yeah, I feel like I'm everywhere, but nowhere. I just feel like, you know, like I am, you know? And then they're like, okay, so everything seems like it's working. We're now going to put you in, you know, we're now going to take this computer chip and put it inside this robot body, right? Boom. So now I'm controlling this robot body. And for me, it's amazing. I'm in heaven, right? Because I can just crush anything, pick up anything. I'm like a superhero now. So I go home so excited. And I'm just doing all kinds of stuff, you know, even like maybe even flying, you know, maybe I'll even like pay a little extra for like those rocket thrusters and stuff so I can fly around like Iron Man, right? And then I fly over to my daughter's house, boom, land. And then the grandkids are all excited and everything. And so now I'm joking around with the grandkids and I'm talking with them, everything. Like, then they're like, grandpa, like, okay, like take this off. And I'm like, no, I'm in this now. You know, I can't take this off. This is me now. And like the kids are kind of scared now because they're only 5 and 6, and they're just like, I don't know, no, you know. And so they kind of run inside, and then, you know, and then my daughter comes out and she's like, oh my God, Dad, this is so weird. This is so freaky. I can't. Is this really you in there? Like, did this really work or what? Or they just, is this just really good programming? And I'm telling her, you know, memories that we had that only I could have known. I'm the way I'm talking, everything. It's just robotic a little bit. The voice is robotic, and it's just not me though, right? But she, you know, my daughter's like, maybe this is just gonna take some time to get used to, right? And then I go and see Annabelle, my younger daughter, while she's training at a gym or something, and she's just like, you know, I don't have time for this. Like, I can't even process this right now. Like, just get away from me, Dad. Like, I told you, I don't give a shit what you do, you know? And she just goes back to, like, training, right? And so then and everybody's looking at me all weird. The whole gym is like, and she's like, Dad, you're just so embarrassing me right now. Like, you know, just please. And so, I walk out of the gym, you know, with everybody looking at me weird and talking and everything, talking, you know, whispering. And now I'm feeling like, you know, second thoughts, you know, and my self-doubt, you know, my insecurities starting to come in, and like, oh no, what did I do? And this is not reversible. You know, I can never go back to my body. And why would I want to anyways? That body is old and tired. You know, it's like, I just think to myself, well, fuck it. You know, I never really, nobody ever really liked me anyways. I've always been a loner, so now I'm a loner superhero. And so, you know, I just fly off, you know, and then I plan a special trip for, you know, for our family, my daughters, my grandkids, you know, and we go and travel around, you know, and like, it's just not the same. And let's just say, like, well, you know, I'll include some scenes where, you know, it's just me sitting up at night because I'm a robot and I don't need to sleep. You know, maybe I can just, like, kind of shut down for a while, you know, like go in sleep mode. But, you know, it's not really the same. And I can just, you know, and let's just say that I'm trying to play with the kids and joke around with them, but they're just not, you know, it's just not the same. And they're just like, no, you know, you took our grandpa, you know? And so after the vacation, we start to realize that life was never about living forever or, you know, being able to have all the things and everything, you know, and do all the things. It was about treasuring the time that you have at the moment, making the most of it now while you have it. Make each moment count. You know, don't wait for later when things are better. Things are always going to be the same or even worse, you know. Maybe they'll get better, but then it'll go down again. You know, it's all, life happens in waves constantly, ups and downs, ups and downs. You're always going to have problems to deal with, and it's only going to be broken up by the occasional crisis, right? Problem, 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 crisis, problem, problem, crisis. And it's like, that's just life. The only problem we really have is thinking we shouldn't have problems. So when you think about it, life is beautiful, not because it lasts, but because the experience, the human experience, both the suffering and the laughter, you know, both the happiness and the sadness, the heartbreak and the, you know, just overflowing heart, you know, like with heart overflowing with love and happiness, you know, it's like, and the broken heart, the full human experience, right? That's what it's about. And it's beautiful. You know, just like Vision said in Marvel, Age of Ultron, at the very end of the movie, he told Ultron, you know, a thing is not beautiful because it lasts. Just like a flower, you know, just like the human experience. So once we come to this conclusion, Ava and I, and my daughter Annabelle, I start to cry. As a robot, I start to sob. And Ava cries with me, and so does Annabelle. And we're all holding each other crying because I know, and they know, we all know what needs to be done. Because for me to continue on in that robot body, that artificial body, that processed life, right? It's just not real. It's not, because I wouldn't be able to feel pain anymore the way they do. I can't, you know, even if I did stub my toe, it's a steel toe, who cares? I can replace it if it breaks. You know, I don't feel hunger. I don't feel that pain. You know, and even the sadness I shouldn't be able to feel. But even as a robot body, my consciousness would know that it's time to go. It's time for my human experience to end, because it's no longer a human experience once you take out the element of pain and hunger and suffering, because you can't have one without the other, right? You can't have light without darkness, and you can't have darkness without light. It's together. It's the yin and yang. It's the full experience, not half. So we cry, and I say goodbye to my daughters one last time, because to keep extending my existence in an artificial way would be to cheapen it, would be to almost ruin it, you know? But because even my grandkids would be scared and they're not enjoying it anymore. And their memories of grandpa are now starting to be affected. It's almost like by trying to extend my existence, I'm cheapening the meaning of it. So we hold each other and we cry and we say goodbye to each other one last time. And that's when I realized this is the meaning of life. The love and sadness that I feel right now, this is life. This is beautiful. And I'm glad I was here for it. And I tell my daughters, maybe the real story is yours. And I'm just a character, just one character in it that's setting up your story, you know? And I'm so glad to be a part of it. Maybe your story is the real story. Maybe you will go out and do great things, and you already have. But maybe one day you will be put in a situation where people really need what you have to offer. You know, and I'm just so glad that I could be a part of whatever story unfolds in your life. You know, but it's time for my character to go. And she turns off my consciousness. She shuts my robot body down for one last time, for the final time. And that's the end. And the lesson hopefully will be that all of us, we all are gonna die one day. We can't avoid it. And even if you could, why would you want to? It would only cheapen your experience here. It would only cheapen the meaning of your life. So instead of, I feel like the purpose of our lives is not to try to stretch it out, you know, to every last minute, just, you know, try to squeeze out every last minute we can of our lives, stretch it all the way out to where 150 years old, you know, 1,000 years old. I don't think that's the point. Just like our dogs, you know, my dog Angel's 15 years old and she's slowing down now. And I realized that the end's coming soon for her too. Such a short time on earth, if you think about it, 15 years old. But it's not about how long we stay. It's about the meaning and the experiences that we pack into our lives and into the time, the dash, right? It's that poem about the date that we're born and the date that we die on the tombstone. There's a dash in between, and life is about that dash. Fill it with meaningful experiences and memories that will be meaningful for you so that you can take with you when you leave this earth. That's what life's about. It's not about stretching it out. It's about packing it in, right? Packing it full of experiences and memories that are meaningful to you. And that's why I'm driving up to see my daughters right now. It's a 4.5-hour drive for me to go and pick them up. And they're going to spend a week with me because next weekend is Father's Day. And I have so many things I want to do with them. Take them to the Andretti, you know, indoor racetrack. See how they like that. You know, just, I'm not trying to brag here. I'm just sharing with you things that I'm starting to realize that are important in life at 40 years old. You know, because we are going to die. And when you die, what does it matter how much money you owed to the IRS? You know, what's that going to matter? What's it going to matter how many bills you have to pay? You know, if you got in a car accident tomorrow, none of that's going to matter. You know, just keep that in mind. We can die at any moment. We never know when our time is up. So let's focus on things that are really important to us, right? And instead of you know, instead of trying to pile up as much money as we can, you know, let's pile up as many memories and experiences that are meaningful to us as we can. Because what was his name? Stuart Wilde, I think it was. He said that money is like manure. If you pile it up, it just stinks. But if you spread it all around, everything grows. I really like that. So don't hoard your money. Spread it around for everything to grow. And instead of trying to accumulate more years in your life, try to accumulate meaningful memories and experiences. I hope this episode, was enjoyable for you. I don't know. It's a long one because I still have 3 hours to go. All right. But anyways, I've taken up enough of your time. Thank you for listening to the story. I may write it down, actually. I've been meaning to, and it would be a very short story. But maybe not. You know, maybe with all the different backstory that I have to put in for it to kind of make sense. Maybe I will turn that into a book form, a short book, and publish it on Amazon and make it available for free on the Kindle. So that anybody who wants to listen to a short story, you know, that kind of has like a nice little lesson at the end that I would like to share about what I believe makes life meaningful. And let me know what you think. If you guys liked it, or give me ideas. Give me some feedback on how I can make it better. I'm totally open to it, and I haven't even started writing it down. So give me some ideas of how I can make it a really good story to write, you know, for people to read, something that's really enjoyable to read, entertaining, but also very thought-provoking. It basically just a really quick synopsis, just a really quick summary again. I wanted to start when I'm older, maybe 72 years old, right? Looking over, like looking, you know, standing in my mansion, overlooking a beautiful, you know, mountainside scenery, living in luxury, you know, having all the money and everything, but it happened late in life. I got it, you know, late. I'm old now. I can't really enjoy my money. And then that's why I would start thinking about maybe, you know, downloading my consciousness into a robot body so I could live forever and have, you know, unlimited amounts of energy. And, you know, then conflict starts to happen with my family. And then things start to happen to help me realize that living forever and, you know, having superhuman powers and all that stuff was never really the point. You know, and, you know, just kind of at the end of life, realizing how I missed it, how I missed what life was all about until the very end. And then even as a robot, I break down and sob, both out of the love I feel for my daughters and the deep sadness, the grief that I feel, because I know that I have to leave this earth in order for the time that I spent here to have any meaning at all. So that's the story that I wanted to tell. If you have any ideas on how I can make it better, please share and let me know. You can email me at junethegroomer@gmail.com. If you're on Anchor, if you're on this Anchor app, you can actually send me a direct voice message. That's two of the best ways to contact me because I'm off social media now. But thanks for your time, guys. I hope everybody is having a great day. I honor the light in you that's also in me. Namaste.